So today is March 2nd, 2016, and we are here at United Orthodox Synagogues in Houston, Texas. And we also have someone now calling in on a conference line, so that's good.
Where is she?
He's also in Houston, Texas, but he's just on a conference call. It's our first test of this, and if it works, we'll send out the number. And so our adoring fans from across the world could listen in. Okay, so Mark and everyone else, we are going to be in Parshat Vayakhel. So if you have the JPS printing of the Tanakh, we're on page 191. And otherwise, we're in the book of Exodus, Sefer Shemot, chapter 35, Perek Lamed Hey. So we are going to begin with a question. And that is the question begins, the parsha begins with Vayakhel Moshe et kol adak b'nei Yisrael vayomer aleihem. Moshe then, here the translation is, convoked or gathered or convened the whole Israelite community and said to them. There are a number of questions that the commentaries raise on this verse. First of all, when did this happen? And I'll explain that question in a moment. And why was it necessary to gather all the Jews at this point? The question of when did it happen is really a question of a dispute in amongst the commentaries, and this may come as a surprise to some of you, as whether or not the Torah is recorded in chronological order, right? Whether we say Ein mukdam umuuchar b'Torah or not, meaning that there are some events. Some commentaries subscribe to the notion that there are some events that are recorded in a place in the Bible, but they actually took place sometime else. Now, no one suggests that the creation story did not take place first, and that the creation story should really took place at the end of the book of Vayikra, right, of Leviticus. No one suggests that, but there are certain small events, and the building of the Mishkan is one of them, where there's a debate as to whether or not it's in order. And the two sides of the debate are important because they actually lead to very different conclusions about the nature of worship, about the nature of Judaism, actually. Some suggest that the Torah is, it happened as the Torah presents it. Moshe went up to Sinai, had a revelation from God, then the Ten Commandments, then Moshe comes down from Sinai, sees that the Jewish people are worshiping the golden calf, destroys the Ten Commandments, goes back up to Sinai, gets another set of Ten Commandments, and then the Mishkan is built. Then the Mishkan is commanded, right? And then they move on, okay? And others suggest no, that the commandment to build the Mishkan came before the sin of the golden calf. So the debate is, when did the commandment to build the Mishkan, when was it given? Mark, you still there?
This is Scott.
Oh, hello, Scott. So now we have another person on the phone. So the debate as to
I put
whether
you
or
on
not.
mute, so I wouldn't interrupt.
Pardon me?
I put you on mute, so you wouldn't hear anything I'm doing or saying.
Oh, great. Okay. Sorry about that. Okay. So the debate again, was the commandment to build the Mishkan given before the sin of the golden calf or after the sin of the golden calf? If it was given after the sin of the golden calf, the assumption is it was given as a result of the golden calf, as a way to react to the golden calf. So we're going to look a little bit about that today. So let's look at the Ramban, Nachmanides, as to what is going on here. Before we look at Nachmanides, I'll tell you that Rashi says that this event happened after Moshe came down from Sinai the second time, right? Which was, tradition says that was right after Yom Kippur. Okay? Now, Let's look at Nachmanides. Okay. We're going to first look at Nachmanides' comments from an earlier portion, Parshat Truma, in chapter 25. In the future, if I remember, I'll try to send out the link to these source sheets I give out in the class, along with the link to the telephone call-in number, so those of you who are on the phone can also see the sheets. But in the meantime, the Ramban, Nachmanides here, is trying to answer a fundamental question, which is, this is page one, what is the purpose of the Mishkan? What role did it play? So he says as follows, the second paragraph, which says, the secret of the tabernacle, in the handout, page one. The secret of the tabernacle is that the glory which abode upon Mount Sinai openly should abide upon it in a concealed manner. For just as it said there, and the glory of the Eternal abode upon Mount Sinai, and it is further written, behold, the Eternal our God hath shown us his glory and his greatness, so it is written of the tabernacle is the Mishkan, and the glory of the Eternal filled the tabernacle. Twice is the verse, and the glory of the Eternal filled the tabernacle, mentioned in connection with the tabernacle, to correspond with his glory and his greatness. Thus, Israel always had with them in the tabernacle the glory which appeared to them on Mount Sinai. So in short, the Ramban Nachmanides is saying that the tabernacle was what? A portable Sinai. Right? Just like God's presence rested upon the mountain and thereby was amongst the Jewish people, that will continue to be the case as the Jews travel from spot to spot in the desert. The God's presence will rest, God's Shekhinah will rest in the Mishkan, accomplishing the same thing that it accomplished at Har Sinai. The difference being, at Har Sinai there were pyrotechnics and there was a great sound and light show. And in the tabernacle, it's going to be a little bit more tsanua. It's going to be a little quieter, a little more private. But fundamentally, the same thing. That's a very important thing for us to remember when trying to unpack what's going on in this week's parsha. Okay. Now with that, let's continue. Now let's go to the Ramban on this week's parsha. Okay. And Moses assembled all the congregation of the children of Israel. The expression, all the congregation of the children of Israel, includes the men and the women, for all donated to the work of the tabernacle. Thus, page 2. Now we're on the...
But it says 35?
Yeah, we're on the fourth line of that paragraph, the last word on the line. Thus, Moses, after having commanded Aaron and the rulers and all the children of Israel, the men, all that the Eternal had spoken with him in Mount Sinai, following the breaking of the tablets, and after he put the veil on his face, as all this is narrated in the preceding section, again commanded the people be assembled. Right? What had happened? God commanded everyone to be assembled the first time. He wanted everyone together. And why did he assemble them? He assembled them to give them the Ten Commandments and to rest his presence on them. And then what happened?
Egel
HaZahav. And then what's the result of the Egel HaZahav?
Breaking
the tablets. What really happened in breaking of the tablets? God's presence rests upon the Jewish people when he gives them the Torah. Then they worship the calf. Moshe breaks the tablets, which symbolizes what?
God's gone.
He's out. He's done. Right? You blew it. God said, I'm going to rest my presence with you. You worship this golden calf. Moshe destroys the tablets, which were going to sit in the Aron Kodesh, which the ark, right, which were covered by the Keruvim, the cherubs, where it says God's presence sat. And now, without the Luchot, without the Ten Commandments in there, it's over. Okay? Now, what happens? The Jewish people, it seems now that we're starting again. And that's really the Ramban's view of what the Mishkan is. Right? It's an attempt once again to what's going on here, not the Mishkan per se, because again the Mishkan was ordered before the sin of the golden calf, right? But the Mishkan is this Vayakel, this moment of standing again, is an attempt to bring back the Shekhinah, if you will, that disappeared from the Jewish people. So look what he says in the next paragraph. It is possible that this occurred on the day following his descent from the mountain. And he told all of them the subject of the tabernacle, which had been previously commanded before the breaking of the tablets. Right? For Nachmanides, everything is in order. Before the breaking of the tablets, God had already told the Jewish people, there's going to be a Mishkan, and I'm going to rest my presence. But now, there's suspense. Is it going to... God's presence has left because of the breaking of the tablets. Is God's presence going to come back? So this Vayakel is another attempt. For since the Holy One, blessed be He, became reconciled with them and gave Moses the second tablets and also made a new covenant that God would go in their midst. We're going to come back to that. He thereby returned to His previous relationship with them and to the love of their wedding. And it was obvious that His presence would be in their midst, just as He had commanded him at first, even as He said, and let them make me a sanctuary that I may dwell amongst them. Therefore, Moses now commanded them all that He had told them at first. This Ramban explains a ton of stuff. Because after what we're going to read in this week's Parsha and next week's Parsha is again Moshe telling the Jewish people to build the Mishkan almost with the exact same language that it has already been commanded in the previous Parshiot before the sin of the golden calf. So why the repetition? Well, the Ramban explains it beautifully. Because you could argue that the previous set of instructions are what? Are voided. God told you to build the Mishkan. Oh, but then you built the Egel HaZahav. So these previous instructions that God told you to build the Mishkan, whereby He was going to rest His presence, those are void. Right? You broke the warranty. So they're void. Now Moshe comes back and says, we're back on. And hear all the instructions again.
Or, a person or people need repetition. If you don't hear it again and again, you forget.
It's already, though, this is already going to be the third or fourth time. There's already been repetition before this. It's a good point.
Are they exactly the same, though, as the previous instructions?
Slight differences. But those are more, I would say, in style than in form, than in content.
So
okay?
Nothing relating to the breaking of the tablets or in the second chant. It's but maybe the Mishkan would be different.
Interesting. No, time. That's a very, very good point. And that may have indicated that things aren't quite the same, but the Mishkan is the same.
Okay?
We're going to get into that in a minute. Okay? Yeah.
The pillars of glory, the clouds, I mean, that was over the Israelites that are the Jews at this time.
Okay? Yeah.
So wasn't that God's presence, essentially?
It's different. It seems like it's different. We're going to see something in a minute about that. Okay? So, yeah.
Just another point, though, is it seems here that He needs to gather everyone, the whole community, because the first time He gave the instructions, it was Hashem basically said, I'm going to imbue and tell Bezalel and Oholiab?
Right.
They're going to basically do the entire job, right?
Right.
They know what to do. I'm going to give them the Chachma and the Bina what to do.
That's actually in this week's parsha.
Is that?
Yeah, also before. It's repeated here. But it's repeated here.
Okay.
Right? Now, but you bring a very good point. What's going on here? So now why Vayakel? Why does God, let's go back to our original question. Why does God collect everyone? Because when's the last time He collected everyone?
At Har Sinai.
At Har Sinai. And what are we afraid of?
The same.
That's also been voided. So the collecting everyone around the instructions to rebuild the Beit HaMikdash is sort of a way to tell B'nai Yisrael that everything's back to normal. Had God just told Moshe, or had Moshe not gathered everyone and just told the architects, just told the builders. That would have been similar to God saying to Moshe, you know what, let's just get rid of everyone and I'll start everyone afresh with you. And Moshe says, no, I don't want any of that. Right? Mecheni na mesifrachai, says, I don't want to do that. So the Vayakel here, this is a second chance at Har Sinai around the instructions to build the Mishkan. Okay? So what happens is, really, what we're seeing here is, according to the Ramban, we have the revelation at Sinai, but the revelation of Sinai is not the end. There's the revelation of Sinai, Kabbalat HaTorah, receiving the Torah, and the building of the Mishkan. So, had God not told the Jews to continue building the Mishkan, it would have represented a truncated type of revelation, right? It would have represented something not complete. Because, according to the Ramban, again, the whole point was Har Sinai, Mishkan, having nothing to do with the Egel HaZahav. The Egel HaZahav actually may have undone God's request to build the Mishkan, and now we're seeing by Vayakel and the Ramban's understanding that it's being redone. And again, the breaking of the Luchot represents an undoing of Ma'amad Har Sinai. That's really what's going on. Moshe came down from Sinai with the Luchot, which represents that everything's good. And then when he breaks them, right, he breaks the very item he got at Har Sinai, representing God's presence, shows that now that relationship has been severed. Now it's being put back together by Moshe going back up, coming back with a second set, and collecting everyone, just like Moshe had collected everyone at Har Sinai. And now there's another actual beautiful proof of this, right? Because if we look back in chapter 33 of Shemot, verses 2 and 3, which is page 186.
Excuse me.
This is after the sin of the golden calf, right? Page 186. What does God say? Then the Lord said to Moses, set out from here, you and the people that have brought up from the land of Egypt, to the land of which I swore to Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob, saying, to your offspring I will give it. I will send an angel before you, and I will drive out the Canaanites, the Amorites, the Hittites, the Perizzites, the Hivites, the Jebusites, but I will not go in your midst. I will not go in your midst. So at this point, post sin of the golden calf, God's is not resting his presence amongst the Jewish people. I'm going to send only a messenger. What does Moshe say? Moshe says, Moshe won't have any of this, right? Moshe says later, understood as a response to this, in chapter 34, verse 9, Vayemaher Moshe vayikod arza vayishtachavu. Moses hastened to bow low to the ground in homage and said, if I have gained your favor, O Lord, pray, let the Lord go in our midst. Even though this is a stiff-necked people, pardon our iniquity and our sin, and take us for your own. Right? Yelech na Hashem b'kirbenu. And in fact, Moshe also says, Moshe further says, Vayomer elav, im ein panecha holchim al ta'aleinu mizeh.
Where are you? Which
Where
one?
Are you?
Hold on 1 second. In 33:15, Moshe's first reaction is, v'yatam na matzati chen beinecha hodini nat dirakecha ve'edecha leman emtza chen beinecha u're'ei ki amcha goyazeh. And then he says, v'yomer 14, panai yelechu v'hanichoti lach. And he said, I will go in and lead and will lighten your burden. And he said to him, unless you go in the land, do not make us leave this place.
Unless you go in the lead.
Right. For how shall it be known that your people have gained your favor unless you go with us? Meaning, there's no point of us going to Eretz Yisrael unless you're leading us. Don't take us there. There's no point. So at this point, it's still very touch and go as to whether or not God's presence is being rested God's resting his presence with the Jewish people. And finally, God gives in, right? And he says, okay, I'm going to go with you. So this now explains why the next two parshiot, Vayakal and Pekudei, once again re-review the entire Mishkan, because we finally know that we're back to normal. Yeah.
In the previous one where he says, I'll give the land Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob, I'll send a messenger with you. Is he saying, I'm going to lessen my participation? Or is he saying, listen, I made a promise to Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob, so I have to keep it, but I'm washing my hands of you.
Right. It sounds that way.
It sounds like
it sounds like I promised them, so I'm going to let you go, and I'm going to make sure that it happens, but I'm sending a messenger. I'm not doing it myself anymore.
I'm through with you, basically.
Well, I'm not sure.
That's my question.
Yeah, it sounds like that. It sounds like there's a lower level of divine providence that the Jewish people are about to experience. And Moshe says, well, if that's the case, then the whole thing is not worthwhile, and we shouldn't do it. And then God gives in.
Now, Rabbi, what should Hashem really think of us? We're at the lowest level of Judaism, the lowest level
right.
of life. We've been slaves. What should he really expect of us except...
Such a good question. Good question. That actually is the defense of the Kuzari. Okay, you actually just came onto something very, very important. At one point, the Kuzari is written by Yehuda Halevi in the form of a narrative, a conversation between the king of the Khazars, who was looking for religion, and the Chacham, or the Chaver, a smart Jew. And at one point, he says, the Khazar says, well, how, because the Kuzari, the Chacham, the Chaver, Yehuda Levi, starts talking about how beloved the Jewish people are to God, we're his chosen people, he chose us from amongst everybody else, he loves us, we're special. And then the king says, well, how special can you be, how much could God love you, if at the first sign of trouble, you started worshiping a golden calf? Right, so how special can you be? And so for pages and pages, so it's pages and pages and pages of dialogue. So he says a few things. This is really interesting. First of all, he says exactly what you said, Ron. He says, what did you expect? Everybody was worshiping physical objects back then. It's such an interesting defense, right? He says everyone was. You would never hear this from the Rambam. The Rambam is, you know, would spit in his grave if he knew about this. He says, of course, everyone was worshiping physical objects at that point.
Doesn't Rambam right? say that's why we had sacrifices, though?
Yes. Well, he says it was too hard to take the Jewish people out of it.
Right.
So everyone was doing it at that point. The Jews just came out of Mitzrayim. That's all they saw. How can you expect them to fully separate themselves from that activity, which is why the Kuzari says, well, if it was that bad, the Chaver, the Chacham says, why didn't God switch us out? Why didn't God destroy us? God must have realized exactly what you're saying, Ron. And then at the end, he says, despite this, those who worshipped the golden calf were punished and executed. The number executed was only around 3,000 out of 600,000 adult males. During this whole debacle, the sustaining manna never stopped falling, nor did the protective clouds dissipate, nor did the pillar of fire leading the way. Prophecy still abounded and even increased during this time. They were deprived of nothing that had been given to them except for the original two tablets which Moshe broke. He later prayed to have another set of tablets given to them, and this wish was fulfilled. Their sin was pardoned. So that's exactly the point that the Kuzari is making. How bad could this have been? How bad could the sin have been? How much could they blame? But we could also work this in to what we're saying in terms of Nachmanides' view of this whole thing. The fact of the matter is, after this, God's presence did continue with them. They still had the manna. They still had the pillar of fire. They still had the cloud. They still had God leading them. All their enemies continued to be destroyed. Obviously, things get back to normal. And in fact, some argue it's better than ever. Some actually compare this to Noah. This is fascinating. That after Noah, right? What happens? God promises he's never going to destroy the whole world again with a flood, right? So things are better than they were before, despite how corrupt it was. And people argue the same thing here. God promises, I'm going to stick with you. I'm never going to abandon you. I'm never going to destroy you. So as low as the Jewish people got during the sin of the golden calf, at the end of the day, the result is the Jewish people are in a better position than they were. In fact, what do they learn from this? What does God tell Moshe? The Gemara says, God says, Moshe, listen, whenever you're in trouble, you just need what? The 13 words, the Yud Gimel Midot of Rachamim. Hashem, Hashem, Kel Rachum V'Chanun, Erech Apayim. And that's a sure thing. Whenever you're in trouble, abracadabra. So you're right, Ron. On some level, God had a lot of understanding. Even though he did threaten, you have to figure out then why did he tell Moshe he wants to destroy everyone. But after God got over that, and maybe quote-unquote, right, saw and realized where Bnei Yisrael were coming from, not only did he forgive them, he actually gave them the secret to their ultimate everlasting survival. Anytime you're in trouble, Hashem, Hashem, Kel Rachum, V'Chanun. It's like anytime you're in trouble, you know, call
like mantra.
You get pulled over for DWI, call the DWI lawyer. He'll get you, right? So you're right. You make a very good point. So, but here, now, by the way, contrast this with the Rambam. The Rambam says there was never, ever in God's mind any thought for a second that they were going to have a Mishkan or Karbanot sacrifices or all of the pomp and circumstance and the rules and the dress and the choreography of a Beit HaMikdash and a Mishkan. That was never God's intention. He only did it, why? Because he realized that they needed it. He realized that they needed it. So for the Rambam, this is the big deal here. For the Rambam, this type of, I guess what some people call a cultish Jewish religion, is second rate. The top rate religion is philosophical. We just have to think pure and proper thoughts about God. That's really, really what we're after. But Nebuch, we're only human, so we need something else. For the Ramban, no, God's intention all the whole time, even before the sin of the golden calf, as it appears in order of the Torah, was to give us a Mishkan. You come out with vastly different views of how we're supposed to view Judaism. So this was really more about the Ramban. We touched on Rambam on Maimonides a little bit as well, and we see here his view is it's as it appears in the Torah, but ultimately, not only were the Jews forgiven, they ended up being in a better position than they were before they started.
But the Rambam,
yeah,
was against all this. Nonetheless, was adamant that all of this stuff was important. You had to keep the mitzvot.
Only once God gave it. But really, we shouldn't have needed it. Of course, now, once it's given, it's given. Of course.
What God says at the first time, he says, listen, do it my way. The second time, he's almost saying, listen, I know you're not going to always do it my way.
Right.
I'll give you a way out.
Right, and Daniel, that's the difference between the Rambam and the Ramban. It's true that the Rambam says they needed all these things, but only it was only by necessity. For the Ramban, this is the way it was l'chadchila, to begin with. So there's that distinction. Okay, everyone, have a wonderful day.
Thank you.